feeling very conscious right at the moment of how what you come into worship with affects the way you hear and hear things, because I've prepared a sermon in part of which talks about facing violence and what happens when that happens. And I know Alison has just experienced a really nasty assault on the public transport on the way here. And so in the face of scenarios like that, things get heard in different ways, and they, that's always the case. Different ones of us come in with different things, and I'm just very conscious of it right at this moment. I need to confess to what some of you have already secretly thought is a rather glaring contradiction between my preaching and my behaviour. Of course, some of you have probably got such a long list of my hypocrisies that you're wondering why I'm only going to stop at one, but it's just one for tonight. Sorry? It's always next week. On Sundays, I come in here and preach a gospel of peace, and I urge you to see that the God made known to us in Jesus is completely non-violent and non-vengeful and non-retaliatory. And I call you to follow Jesus on a pathway that renounces violence and seeks always to make peace. And then on Tuesday nights, I go to a Taekwondo class and I receive training in the effective use of physical violence. And I encourage my daughter in her participation in the same classes, and since she outranks me in the class, if you want to pick a fight with one of us, you will be in greater danger if you choose her. So here I am as a preacher of peace, feeling quite proud of my daughter's fighting skills with her fists and her feet and doing my best to match her, and it doesn't really add up, does it? Well, I'm not going to defend myself against the charge of hypocrisy in any detail here, because firstly, I'm not sure that I can, and secondly, it's not really the point that I'm trying to make. Suffice it to say that I joined the class for the purposes of physical fitness rather than for the fighting skills, and that I sincerely hope that I will never use the fighting skills to hurt another human being in any real life situation. But developing those skills while simultaneously preaching against their use has caused me to reflect on something of what it meant for Jesus to be who he was and do what he did. And the points which it has helped to illuminate for me are apparent in tonight's gospel reading. But before I get to tonight's reading, I want to bring in another thing that Jesus said elsewhere, which might help bridge the jump that I'm trying to make from Taekwondo to this particular story of Jesus. In Matthew's account of the arrest of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, one of his disciples pulls out a sword and starts slashing wildly. And Jesus says, "Put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword." Actually, Ian told me just recently that one local right-wing Christian commentator and wannabe ethicist has argued in support of gun ownership on the grounds that Jesus said, "Put your sword back in its place," rather than "get rid of your sword," and that therefore he acknowledged a rightful place for weapons. Well, to treat that argument with far more respect than it actually deserves, any rightful place that Jesus accords the weapon has clearly got nothing to do with using it, even when attacked by an armed mob. But anyway, what really interests me for our purposes here is Jesus' next line. He says, "Do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father and he will at once send more than 12 legions of angels?" Maybe you can see the connection I'm making to my Taekwondo here. Jesus is implying that he has the capacity to fight force with force if he wished. The capability is there. So he's telling his sword-wielding friend, "If I wanted to meet fire with fire, I would not be needing your little knife. One word from me and the angel cavalry comes over the hill and it's all over. But I'm choosing not to exercise that power, and I want you to follow me in that choice, so put away your sword." Now, what I really want to focus on is that choice not to use the power. But first, two slightly tangential comments about actually having it. It is quite probable that my slightly increased capacity to use physical violence does actually make it more likely that I never will. Partly because it makes me less likely to panic in a threatening situation. And I do say that as somebody who has had his nose broken 3 times in acts of violence. I know, I shouldn't keep sticking it where it's not wanted, but 2 of those incidents were actually rather like the one that Alison witnessed today, where someone else was being threatened and I chose to get in the way, which was a decision that I was in a position to make because I was on my own, I didn't have small children with me, I didn't have any of the sort of things that Alison was dealing with today. And I think the fact that I would now have a slightly better chance of actually deflecting the blow instead of wearing it on the snout makes me somewhat more likely to be willing to do that again if it was necessary. And when I think about my daughter and anybody else's sons and daughters, I have become convinced over the years that trying to teach a child to turn the other cheek can actually be a form of abuse in itself, unless they have first learned to fight. I hope that my daughter learns to turn the other cheek, but I know that she has a sidekick technique that is the envy of some black belts, and so it will be a real choice, not her only choice. Unless you could choose to retaliate effectively, turning the other cheek and getting hit repeatedly is not usually something you have any choice about. The ethics of choosing between violence and non-violence don't come into it unless both are available options. But for one who could, in an instant, call on more than 12 legions of angels, turning the other cheek is clearly a decision that involves his ethics. So in tonight's reading, we see and hear Jesus dealing with the growing threat of deadly violence. Some Pharisees, who were not usually known for their care and concern for Jesus, come and warn him to go into hiding because King Herod wants to kill him. This is certainly not the first threat of violence against Jesus. In fact, Herod's father, who was also called Herod, had apparently tried to have Jesus killed when he was a baby and killed a whole bunch of innocent babies in the attempt. And as we heard just a few weeks ago, Jesus very nearly got himself killed the first time he preached in his hometown of Nazareth. And there have been various reports of the religious and political power brokers conspiring against him. So this warning that Herod is trying to kill him does not lack any credibility. And Jesus clearly takes it seriously because he pretty much says, I know they're going to get me sooner or later. But I'm betting it won't happen until I get to Jerusalem, but I know it's going to happen. He could see the writing on the wall. He knew that what he was doing would continue to enrage those who wielded power, and he knew how they would respond if he didn't back down. And right in this here in this story, he is warned to back down, but what does he do? He shrugs his shoulders and he says, you go tell that fox from me that I'm going right on doing what I'm doing, casting out demons, healing the sick, and I'll still be doing it tomorrow, and I'll still be doing it the next day until I finish my work, by which time we'll be in Jerusalem. So right up front, we can say that whatever the choice for non-violence means for Jesus, it does not mean submissive compliance to the wishes of those who wield power and violence. His stand is bold, defiant, perhaps even antagonistic, although clearly not just for the sake of it. Jesus is going to do what he has come to do, and he's not going to be bullied out of it, no matter how big and how real the threat. There's a freedom that comes with the willingness to accept suffering if it should come. As long as we are determined to avoid suffering at all costs, or we are determined to be the winners in any clash of force, our capacity to hold the line in doing what is right is severely limited by the needs for self-protection or strategic advantage. When we have surrendered the need to either avoid it or inflict it, the threat of suffering begins to lose its power to dictate our behaviour. as Thomas Merton said in one of our Lenten readings during this past week, suffering has no value in itself. It is not to be sought, nor is it to be merely accepted. It is of value only as we surrender to it and as we surrender it and ourselves to God, so that God might work redemptively in it and through it, reshaping us in the image of Christ and exposing and challenging the demonic nature of those who inflict suffering on others. And this especially we can see in this example of Jesus in this story, because Jesus knows what's coming to him and he keeps pushing ahead on the path that he's on. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. He knows what's coming. And then comes the very famous image that is probably a whole lot richer than we normally notice. Jerusalem, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. Too often we hear this line on its own out of context and don't get the full force of it. Because what has Jesus just called Herod? A fox. And what does he now call himself? A chook looking after a brood of chicks. We are supposed to hear those two images in relation to one another. In the paraphrase that we heard read earlier, it was a mother swan and a vicious dog, because if I remember rightly, the week that it was written, there had just been a well-publicised series of attacks by feral dogs on nesting swans down at Albert Park Lake, so it was a very alive image at the time. So here we have Jesus staring down the fox, knowing himself capable of calling down more than 12 legions of angels, but instead offering himself as the one who will absorb the full force of the violence without reciprocating it. He goes clucking into the city that stones prophets with his little brood under his wings, while the foxes circle ever closer and the firestorm of hatred and hostility comes raging across the barnyard. Actually, a firestorm might be a quite helpful image to understand what Jesus is describing here. No doubt there were plenty of chickens killed in that big grass fire on the northern outskirts last Tuesday. And there are often stories after fires of farmers finding live chicks huddled under the burnt bodies of the dead burnt bodies of their mothers. That's what Jesus is saying to you. When the fires of hostility and violence come your way, Jesus longs to be able to throw himself over you and take it all on himself to protect you. But you were not willing, he says. We make it impossible for him to shelter us when we're always running away to avoid being too close to the one who doesn't run away. But Jesus, if Jesus wants to protect us so badly, why does he not call down that 12 legions of angels and just do it? After all, usually when a mother chook throws herself protectively over her chicks, the fox or the fire simply take the mother first and the chicks next. As a success rate, as a protection strategy, its success rate is very, very low. Why not the 12 legions of angels, or at least a couple of Acacia's flying sidekicks? A thorough response to that question is not going to be able to be jammed into a sermon that has already pretty much done its time, but let me just give one bit for now. Jesus' desire to liberate us from violence is not just in the immediate, but always also in the bigger picture. And Jesus knows that violence can never be defeated by violence. When violence is applied to violence, it always begets more violence. Sometimes it leads to an immediate escalation, and sometimes when one side is vastly more powerful, it leads instead to festering resentment that eventually explodes in more violence. Jesus knows that if he calls on the 12 legions of angels to bring more violence into the system, it simply means that there is now more violence in the system. And therefore, everybody is actually in more danger than before. retaliation and retribution only ever increase the sum total of violence spiraling around in what's essentially a closed system. And there are only two ways that the total volume of violence is ever reduced, and they usually go hand in hand. One is by soaking it up, by absorbing it without returning it. Jerusalem, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers a brood under her wings in the face of the violence of the foxes. And the other is by injecting the only known antidote to violence into the system, and that is mercy. And the two so often go hand in hand because mercy is at its most potent when it is offered by the immediate victim of the violence. We heard the Apostle Paul in another of our readings talking, as he so often does, about imitating role models as a pathway to discipleship. And the imagery of following Jesus on the road is clear in the gospel story too. This road of courageously continuing to do what is right in the face of opposition and threats, and being ready, if need be, to cop the consequences without contributing to the violence ourselves, is a road that we are called to follow Jesus on, imitating him for the life of the world. Our friends at the Holy Transfiguration Monastery have a line in their mission statement that says, "Let our only experience of violence be in suffering it." That does pose something of a challenge to my participation in next week's Taekwondo class, but it is an excellent, succinct summary of what it means to follow Jesus on the road. But of course, like any succinct summary and like this sermon itself, it does not answer all the complexities of all the questions of all the real-life situations in which violence happens. That's why I've never quite been a total pacifist. I just can't. There are still situations in which I can't actually work it out. I think Jesus was one, but I can't quite get there yet. As we continue this Lenten journey, following Jesus on the road is what it's all about. Anyway, if Jesus had 12 legions of angels at his command, he may well have had a fairly potent spinning back tick as well. But he was strong enough and wise enough and courageous enough to make his only experience of violence in suffering. So let's commit ourselves to following him further down that same Lenten road, all the way to the cross.